Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hey, welcome back to the latest installment of the Wide Ride Podcast. I'm Manny Navarro, Miami Hurricanes writer for The Athletic, joined once again by Carlos Ledo of the MIA All Day Podcast. Carlos, you're in the office today doing some taxes for people who filed late, some extensions. What's your advice to people who wait until the last minute to file their taxes?
Don't come see me. because I will hate you. And on top of that, I will charge you more money for being a dick and waiting and then making me take more time after taxes. No, I mean, listen, if it's inevitable, dude, you got to do what you got to do, right? You got to file the extension. But I will tell you something. There's a little free game for you guys that you don't know. A lot of people don't realize this. If you end up owing money and you filed an extension, you're going to pay interest on whatever it is you owe. Mm. So from the moment you were supposed to file that tax return, which is April 15th, through the date you file that, or really until you pay, the IRS is charging you interest daily on whatever it is your final amount owed is. So you're going to pay more money if you file that extension. So sometimes it may be worth it, you know, to bite the bullet in and get that done on time. And you don't have to pay the full amount. I mean, you set up a payment plan. The other thing is, if you don't owe money, then you're good. You can go past the deadline and there's no issue. You don't need to file an extension. But, you know, if you don't know whether you're going to owe or not, then it's kind of up in the air.
Good advice. Free advice here from Carlos Ledo Esquire here in South Florida. Carlos, question for you. Have you had any athletes come in, guys who didn't file NIL taxes?
No, unfortunately, I have not. I did used to do a couple minor league baseball players, and those checks were paltry.
Okay. Well, these guys, I mean, the ones at the University of Miami are making some real money for sure.
Yeah, those guys are out of my league. Those guys
They're rolling. It is Thursday, April 25th, right around 3 p.m. as we're recording today's episode. Tonight is the first round of the NFL draft. And while we're going to get into transfer portal talk, departures, guys that Miami's targeting, we're going to do some mailbag questions that you guys have sent in to us. I want to start with the draft, Carlos, because this is the painful annual reminder. It's almost like when you realize...
It's the anal reminder.
It's the anal reminder, correct, that Miami football has sucked for two decades. And I'm going to throw a stat at you here, Carlos. Miami has had six first-rounders drafted since a 14-year run of first-round picks ended in 2008 with Kenny Phillips. So my question to you, Carlos, and maybe you, if you're watching this on YouTube or listening to us on the regular podcast feed, can you name the six first round picks since Kenny Phillips was taken in the first round in 2008?
Since Kenny Phillips. No. Was Calais Campbell after?
Calais Campbell was not after. He was in the same draft, one in the second round.
Shit. All right. So we got Jalen Phillips.
Mm-hmm. You can go backwards. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Greg Rousseau.
Yep.
That's two right there. You got me stumped here, man.
I feel like I should be playing the Jeopardy song. Like it should be.
Ding, give me positions.
Ding, ding, ding. One of them was a tight end.
Ding, okay, so Greg Olson. No, Greg Olson was after 08 or before 08. Jesus Christ. Njoku?
Njoku. David Njoku is one of them for sure. We have a cornerback, an offensive tackle, and a wide receiver.
Offensive tackle, wide receiver. Philip Dorsett?
That's one of them. Correct. Okay. You got two left.
Chantrell Henderson?
Nope. No. Chantrell was a seventh rounder.
Seventh, yeah, Jesus Christ, that was way off. Damn, who was that offensive tackle?
Eric Flowers.
Eric Flowers, forgot about him with the Giants.
Ninth overall, and the last one was a cornerback. Artie Burns. Correct, Artie Burns.
Got you, under the buzzer.
Under the buzzer.
Five out of six.
I will give you credit. For all the Miami fans who sit here and say, oh, these guys have had enough talent to win the ACC. When I tell you six first-round picks since 2008, you say?
That sucks. Like, that's not good. That's not good. I would say, which I'm pretty sure you probably have ready to go, what other schools have had more than six first-round picks since 2008?
I would say, and I don't have this readily available because I've looked this stuff up in the past when I've brought these kind of numbers up, but I just don't have them. I can tell you that there are other ACC schools. I would say Louisville.
North Carolina.
Certainly Florida State, North Carolina, NC State.
Clemson.
I would say Miami is probably, I don't know, seventh or eighth on the list in terms of ACC schools, not counting Cal and Stanford and, you know, SMU who just.
Yeah, the new arrivals, the new blood.
Right. So, Carlos, it's just, you know, again, you talk about what Mario Cristobal has to dig out of, what he has to do to bring Miami back. Well, nights like tonight when Cam Kitchens and James Williams and some of the other guys who left early have no chance of being taken in the first round, should remind you, hey, this is a major overhaul in terms of changing the image of the program. And I think he's getting there. I think there are some first-round picks, future first-round picks that he's brought into the program here. But yeah,
but only if they continue to trend that way.
Yeah, only if they continue to play well. And
because
develop.
We assumed Leonard Taylor would be a first-round pick, right? A lot of people thought that would be the case.
Well, he was a five-star, so people automatically assume all five-stars are going to pan out. But right. A lot
of people thought James Williams could probably be a first-round pick.
Yeah. Yeah, well, a lot of people thought wrong. This is why recruiting rankings. This is why recruiting rankings mean shit, Carlos.
Exactly.
They mean absolute and total horseshit. It is an evaluation made on potential, and body size, and what good people like your buddy over at 247 Sports, or the guy you call your nemesis.
Don't bring up his name.
I won't say his name.
Don't say his name. That's like Voldemort. It's he, yes. He who shall not be named from 247.
But Mr. Ivins.
Damn it, Manny.
But listen, they do great work. I'm not knocking.
No, they do awesome work. He's fantastic.
But my point is, like, there's a whole mixture into the player development, right? And getting players to be first-round picks. And I think Mario did a good job at Oregon in the 4 years that he was there. He just had one of his former players sign the biggest NFL contract ever by an offensive tackle. Penei Sewell just did that this week. You know, Kayvon Thibodeau was a top five pick. Mario knows how to identify guys that are first rounders. Are they all going to pan out? Are some guys that he recruits going to fizzle? Absolutely. But I think that's the way it is across the board in college football. Everybody has guys that fizzle out. It's ultimately getting as many lottery tickets and five stars and four stars and some of the best guys and turning a handful into first round picks every single year. If you can do that, then you're Georgia, you're Alabama, you are a national title contender. And so tonight is just one of those nights. And the other reason I bring up the draft is because, you know, it's tonight and the next couple of days and Miami fans will watch and say, man, I can't believe, you know, this guy left early and he's only a third or a fourth round pick, you know?
It's not just about, you know, talent identification, right? It's easy to identify who the best players are, right? And those five stars are clearly the best players in the country, given that where they are in the stage of their development in comparison to other people within that same stage of development, right? Yeah. You can't always predict what they'll be when they get to college because some guys just all of a sudden blossom, the light turns on, the work ethic is also a consideration, how hard they work, what they do while they're there, what kind of coaching they receive, how they're developed. So it's not just about talent identification. It's the acquisition, obviously, getting them to go to your school is obviously the major part of that. So the more talent you have, like you said, the better off you are, because then you have to factor in the other things, which is, you know, player retention and attrition.
Yeah.
How does that work out? Injuries, things of that nature. So you've got to work all these factors in. So it's a numbers game. The more guys you have of that caliber, the better off you're going to be, but you've got to land them first. And how do you land them? Well, first you got to get a sales guy to be able to get in there like Mario to pitch them on the program, but then you got to be able to have sustained success and develop guys and show that you can turn them into first round picks. Because if you can't, if you don't have the track record, then guys will be turned off and they'll stop coming to your school, and you'll start having an exodus now with NIL, with the transfer portal, of people leaving your school.
Yes. And that's going to happen a lot more often now with the transfer portal window open. And we'll get into it. Miami lost some guys that I know the fan base was like, man, I can't believe they lost a starter like Jared Harrison Hunt, who started 22 games. What does that mean that he's leaving? I can't believe they lost, you know, guys like Jaden Wayne and Nigel Lee Kelly that were top 100 recruits. It's a bad sign. There's the negative people out there who look at that. And my response to them, Carlos, is welcome to the new world of college football. This is the way it rolls. And I look, one of the fans, I know one of the mailbag questions is specifically about this, so I don't want to get too in-depth here. We have other things to talk about. But just a quick little sort of teaser, I would tell people who are worried about that, don't be worried about it. Because ultimately, these coaches, they don't know what they're getting, right? There's a pretty little wrapper on the outside. It says 5-star, 4-star when they come in the building. And then you take that wrapper off, and you're like, holy crap, this piece of candy is terrible. And it doesn't do all the things that we want it to do. And it's really not a piece of candy. And we're not going to pay it as much NIL as it should be, or thinks that it's worth. And so we're going to bring in a new piece of candy and hope that when we pull the wrapper off, it's got all the ingredients that we like and not, you know, something that's spoiled or bad or wrong. So it's just the way it is. That's business in college football today. We'll get into that more in a bit. Carlos, yesterday I was on, I'm going to name drop for you. I know when you love when I name
right
drop. I was on the Audible with Stuart Mandel and Bruce Feldman, my colleagues at The Athletic. Bruce Feldman, of course, Miami fans pretty familiar with his work, you know, besides the fact that he's on Fox broadcast and doing sideline work. Bruce and I were talking about, and Stuart, we're talking about Miami football, Florida State football, my favorite, as you know, and the Florida Gators, and just kind of what I've been hearing. I talked to a lot of reporters who cover those teams, different people around the state, Carlos. Bruce Feldman, on his own, says he predicts Miami will be a playoff team this year. Bruce Feldman, when you hear that, Carlos, how excited are you?
Listen, Bruce is a great guy. He's a great journalist. I don't know what his prediction record is in terms of predicting how well college football teams are going to perform. I've just been scarred by over 20 years of mediocrity at this program. Yes. And high hopes. I have been kicked in the nuts more than I'd like to remember. And I refuse to go into a season too high, you know, waving that flag like I have in the past, where I've run into a season talking mad shit, saying this is a 10-win team. This is a, you know, team that could compete for the ACC championship. We're going to do it this year. We're going to put it on people. We're going to surprise people. And then, you know, 7-5 happens, 8-4 happens. And I end up looking like an idiot. So what I want to do is just take it nice and slow, you know. There's no need to rush this.
Put a little R. Kelly on.
Put a little R. Kelly on. Not R. Kelly, because then we're going to get to it too fast. And then really, you put bump and grind on, and there's only one thing that's going to happen. There's only one result to that equation, right? So we're gonna back off the R. Kelly. Maybe we put a little Barry Manilow on. We're going to be a little more smooth, right? A little Neil Sedaka. A little stuff that'll make you like not be turned down, but be into it enough to where you have to talk over the music because you're not really into it. But yeah, I mean, I'm happy that Bruce feels that way. I think they do have a lot of talent. I think a lot of the excitement is surrounding Cam Ward. I think a lot of people with their predictions coming into the season are overlooking the holes on the team because they see how good Cam Ward is and what he means to his offense and what he can mean in terms of the leap forward for the offense. But I mean, I'm still scared of that secondary. I'm still scared that maybe, you know, that defensive line now is not going to be good enough. I'm concerned that the offensive coordinator is going to pigeonhole and box in Cam Ward and not give him the tools and the ability to be as free as it needs to be able to put up the points that they can put up. So there's a lot of questions to me, but I need to see it happen. Do I want them to be great? Do I want them to be a playoff team? Hell yeah. Do I anticipate it happening? I'm not going into the season doing that. I'm going to release all expectations of the universe And I'm going to let the Hurricanes surprise me, hopefully, and not get kicked in the nuts once again. Because it's happened too many times, man. I've been heartbroken way too many times. It's like that girl that you've asked out a couple times, and she says yes, but then every time you want to go out with her, she's always got something going on. So it's like a win, but not really. That's what happens with these Hurricanes, and I'm tired of it. So thank you, Bruce, for the inspiration, but I'm going to back off of it. I'm going to let you do all the talking. And, you know, oddly enough, you were talking to Stuart Mandel and Bruce Feldman on the phone. I got to speak to my mom yesterday. So, yeah, I speak to
pretty
important
even.
People, too.
Pretty
important
even.
People, too, man. So there you go.
Well, I was very lucky to be invited on the show on their podcast, which does much better numbers, I'm sure, than this one. But, Carlos, you and I, listen, I love doing the show with you every single week. But when I can name drop Bruce Feldman and mention him, I got to do it. I got
to. Manny, if I had the opportunity, I would never speak to you again if Bruce Feldman said he wanted to be my boy.
All right, Carlos. So Miami is going shopping, right? And this is a very important weekend. They're going shopping in the transfer portal. Several guys are going to be here on campus. The one I confirmed independently on my own, and I don't really try, Carlos, to confirm this stuff. It's kind of like it goes out there, and once it's out there, the kids say, I'm visiting Miami. It's easy. Damian Martinez, who The Athletic ranks as the number one overall available player in the transfer portal, 1,100 yard back, actually. He ran for 1,100 yards last season at Oregon State, about 6 foot, 232 pounds. He will be here starting today, Thursday, visiting here this weekend. Houston wide receiver Sam Brown, a guy who's about 6'2", 195, led Houston in receiving, played for Shannon Dawson prior to that, before Shannon Dawson came over here to Miami. He is another guy who will be here this weekend. Former Louisville linebacker Jalen Alderman. This is all thanks to the hard work of one Gabby Urrutia, who spends way too much time talking to Miami's personnel people and to different people in college football. He will be visiting here this weekend. Alderman is a 14-game starter last season for the Cardinals, a weak side linebacker. A guy, remember, we talked about how Miami probably wanted to go out and add another experienced starting caliber linebacker in case of injury, right? In case one of their guys goes down, you're not throwing with a freshman out there. So this makes sense. And then Marshall cornerback, Dyani Hill, a guy who started 9 games last year. That's another dude visiting this weekend. We talk about the secondary, the concerns there. He, of course, played both for Miami's defensive coordinator and cornerbacks coach. So, you know, their familiarity there. Louisville's linebacker, of course, played for Derek Nicholson, Miami's linebackers coach. I told you, Carlos, when this thing started, expect this to become like an NFL free agency. A lot of familiar players, guys that have been coached elsewhere. When you're going to make that kind of investment, right, for the player and for the team, it makes sense. The player gets to go back and work with a coach he used to work for, right, and play for. And then for the coach, it's, hey, this is the guy who I've had in my locker room, and I know what he's made of, and I know he can handle our scheme. So that's the kind of stuff that I think is just going to permeate more and more. And what that's going to do is lead guys to leave. And you're going to take NIL money that might be going to a young guy who, you know, when you look at it and you've had him in your system for a year or two and you say, yeah, he's okay, but we can't necessarily, he's not a gem, right? Let's bring in an older guy who will help us more. Those are the decisions you make in a college football office. So those guys, and then one more, Tennessee edge rusher Tyler Barron is the big name that dropped today from Gabby Urrutia over at 247 Sports, a guy who had 10.5 tackles for loss and 6 sacks last season. Transferred, I think, initially to Louisville and then had left Tennessee, and now he's back in the portal. So those are the guys this weekend. Next week, a couple of defensive linemen are supposed to be coming, both of them from Michigan State, Derek Harmon and Simeon Barrow Jr. So, Carlos, Miami obviously had to make room on their roster. I think I counted them. I'm not counting Isaiah Taylor as a scholarship player. That's Jason Taylor's son. I don't think he's on scholarship. I have them at like 84, 83 scholarships right now. So there'll probably be a couple more that leave so that you can get to the 85 number. But guys that really, in my opinion, aren't big time players here, you know, or not starters anyway, not expected to be starters. So they'll trim some more fat to make room for the majority of these guys. The big loss, or the one that was notable, okay, was Jared Harrison Hunt, 22 career starts. I mentioned him earlier. Jaden Wayne, Nigel Kelly, those were big names. You had Caleb Spencer, Jakari Brown, Javonte Citizen, the running back, and then Logan Sagapalu. When you look at this situation, right, and these guys leaving, does it bother you? Are you okay with it? Have you moved on to, let's just get the transfers and win with the transfers? What's your thought process when you see this movement?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, it's part of the game now. It is what it is. At this point, you're always going to have attrition. You're always going to have guys jumping in the portal after that spring practice period. It just sucks to me that they lost a guy like Jared Harrison Hunt. To me, that was their best defensive tackle last year. He was the most consistent to me, and he was the most productive. He's been a good player here for a long time. You know, sad to see him go. I guess he decided there was a better opportunity somewhere else. But I think that
could be Florida State, by the way.
No, that's awesome. Great. And that weakens a position that already had some holes in it, where they had to go out and get a couple transfers already before spring practice to try and supplement that.
If I can intervene for a quick second, my intel on that is that CJ Clark and Marley Cook, the two guys that they brought in this go around, did well enough this spring for the coaching staff to essentially tell Jared Harrison Hunt, hey, you're not going to get as many reps as you necessarily want. We're being honest and upfront with you. Yes, you had a good season last year. You were our most consistent defensive tackle, but we like some other guys. And let's not forget, Carlos, Miami went out and signed a five-star kid in this last cycle, top 10 overall recruit that, you know, Justin Scott, that they feel really strongly about. They also have another kid, Artavius Jones, that are coming in 300-plus pounders already. These kids don't need to come in and add weight.
Yeah.
So I think, unfortunately, it's like he's a sixth-year senior. I think he probably ends up at SMU or Florida State or one of these, you know, other schools that are just looking to pick him up and bring him in there. But I would say when Mario Cristobal goes out and brings in 10 new defensive linemen, not counting the guys that are coming in this weekend, just, you know, Elijah Alston from Marshall, who's an edge rusher, and then you bring in seven true freshmen in a recruiting, you kind of send a strong message that maybe you didn't really like your defensive line as much as you thought, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But again, I think relying on a bunch of young pups to be rotational guys immediately, no matter what they weigh, is a little bit risky, no?
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you've got a guy like Jared Harrison Hunt, who's been consistent, and he was a six-year guy, who's a grown-ass man, really, he's a grown-ass man, that yeah. helps. And I think that's one of the problems the Hurricanes have had over the last few years, even over the last decade or so, with early departures and guys leaving the program to try and get drafted in the fourth or fifth round and not develop fully. The Hurricanes haven't had enough consistency in the roster in terms of older depth to make them competitive. And that's why they end up losing to teams that maybe don't have as much talent, but have older dudes, grown-ass men. Like I've said before, the grown-ass man factor, that makes a difference. When you're playing with older dudes, guys that have been around, that have seen it all before, that have been there, and are just grown men, that yeah. helps your program. So I think, yes, from a talent perspective, maybe they upgraded with the younger guys and letting Jared go. But I mean, from an overall culture and maybe just even production on the field perspective, because he's been there and done it as a grown man, maybe they're going to be hurt a little bit. But hopefully they make that up with the younger guys and with the guys that got on the portal. But it's clear to me that they're still not happy because they're still going after guys in the portal.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I think part of this is, Carlos, it's almost like a balance, like this weird balance where you start to work on developing guys, but then you almost have to cut bait quickly because if other guys leave that are ahead of them on the depth chart and you have a hole, right, in terms of experience, you almost have to pick the experience because year to year to year, you're trying to win. And I think for Miami, I'm not saying they're all in and forget player development for right now. But I think with Cam Ward, you have a special quarterback, right? Or somebody that you think can be special. Somebody that even NFL scouts have said, yeah, this is a guy who could be an NFL quarterback one day. And you almost like have to roll the dice. Like, hey, we got to try to win this year, right? Like we can keep recruiting freshmen behind in this next class and bring in more transfers and do what we need to do. But it's almost like, I don't know. It's almost like in baseball, right? When a team decides, hey, we're a contender this year, we're going to trade the young prospects or build the other way and say, you know what? We're not a contender this year. Let's just play the young guys.
That's what it's become. And I think they, like, you're right. I think they've seen now after a full spring of Cam Ward that they have something special. They have something better than they even anticipated. So they've got this short window, this 1-year window to get in there and try and make some noise and make a playoff and see what happens.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Carlos, I made the rounds this week. I called my buddy Ira Schoffel with Florida State. I spoke.
Like, you don't call him every day.
No, I don't. I don't. I, as much as I can't help the hide the Seminole fandom in me, as many of our listeners love to point out, I spoke to him after their spring game. I spoke to Kevin Brockway, who covers the Florida Gators for the Gainesville Sun. I've kind of reached out because I'm starting to do a little bit of research on the opponents, like what's going on with these teams. Where does Miami sort of stand? And then I also reached out to Matt Baker from the Tampa Bay Times. Matt is a really good dude. He's kind of covers FSU and Florida and college football for the Tampa Bay Times. And he's really been all over this story as far as the ACC and the legal fight that Florida State and Clemson are having with the ACC, because there's kind of been a lot that's been going on. I don't know how much have you paid attention to it. Have you read up much on what's happening and what sort of the end game is there? What's your take on what's happened so far with that?
I haven't read much on it, but I know the ultimate end game is that Florida State and Clemson want to get out.
Right.
They want to figure out a way to get out. That's it. That's the ultimate thing. And they're trying to figure out any legal way possible that they can force their way out of that contract. But if it was that easy, they would have been out already.
I bring this up only because Miami fans are always interested, right? And we always get questions every single week. What's Miami doing? What are they doing in their fight with the ACC? Why aren't they fighting to get to a new conference? So I just wanted to get a little bit of background on this. And I talked to Matt about this week, because I said, look, there's obviously a couple different, there's four different legal cases. The ACC is suing FSU in Florida. Florida State is suing the ACC in Florida, and then Clemson and the ACC are having their battle in South Carolina. Is it North Carolina? I don't know. There's like, whatever. There's four different lawsuits essentially going on here. Okay.
And everybody should be in South Carolina.
South Carolina, right. Clemson would be in South Carolina. And I think maybe the ACC is suing FSU in North Carolina. That's what it is. That's what I messed up there. But everybody's suing each other, right? And Miami fans are like, well, what does this mean? What's going to happen? From my conversations, both with Ira Schoffel at Florida State, who does a fabulous job for War Chant, and from Matt, who's done a lot of digging legally in all this, I think ultimately all three sides know nobody's necessarily going to win here. Like, I don't think the expectation is that they want to really push this through court in the sense of, okay, the grant of rights is illegal and now college football becomes a complete and absolute free-for-all, right? Where the grant of rights is negated and Florida State and Clemson get off scot-free. I think they kind of know that that's not going to happen. So in a lot of ways, It's kind of muddying the waters, Carlos. It's kind of like, we're going to go fight you in court. We're going to drag this out. We're going to make you do something you really don't want to, so that eventually you just concede and say, forget it. You want to break up, we're going to let you go, but we're not going to make you pay all $400 million to get your TV rights back, whatever it is, $700 million.
Yeah, and that's usually the point of a lawsuit a lot of times. What people don't realize is 90 to 95% of lawsuits actually settle out of court. They don't go to court. Because both sides would rather work something out beforehand than go through the process of a long, drawn-out legal battle. And it's really the person who generally files a suit is trying to make it as uncomfortable as possible for the person they're suing, so they can get a settlement and get out quickly before they have to invest all that time and effort into a trial where you're leaving it up in the hands of either a judge or jurors, and you don't know what the outcome is going to be. You'd rather have as much personal control over the outcome as you can, and you can do that through settlement. So that means you may have to compromise ultimately on what it is your end goal is, but at least you control that ending, as opposed to coming away with possibly nothing or not enough of what you want by going to trial. And one of the strategies you use when going to trial is discovery. And I'm sure that's what Florida State, Clemson are trying to use to leverage the ACC, which is, listen, you know, we're going to go into discovery. We're going to ask you about, you know, your messages with ESPN, your emails, your contacts.
Yep.
And all of those are contained on devices. And those devices now become available to us to be able to search through. Now, right next to that text message that you have to ESPN, you know, the head of ESPN product development, whatever the case may be, there's a text message to your mistress. Do you want us publicizing that? Do you want us asking you about that in a deposition under oath? I mean, there's things you could bring up in depositions and outside of lawsuits and discovery that aren't subject to what's called the rules of evidence that can make things uncomfortable for people and force them to give in to your whims a little bit. But again, also the flip side happens with the other side, right? The other side can get discovery as it relates to the matters that you're talking about. So really what they're going to try and do is make things as impossible as they possibly can for each other and see who's most annoyed and see who has the biggest coffers behind them, because lawsuits are expensive. And the more time you spend defending a lawsuit or pursuing a lawsuit, the more those billable hours for your attorneys get racked up. Mm-hmm. So you have to figure out, is it worth the cost? The ACC at this point probably has more money available to them because of the television contracts to be able to fight these lawsuits than Florida State or Clemson have, because what they're doing is relying on booster money to fund these suits. And yeah, they may have a lot of money from their boosters, and they may have a lot of money that boosters are willing to contribute. But to what point are those boosters willing to fight this? At what point do they say, man, this money's better served on continuing to push this into NIL or improving our facilities or doing other things to attract more talent and win more games than trying to fight this legal battle that we see is probably not going to end the way we want it? Because even a victory for us on that side for Florida State and Clemson means we end up not paying $400 million. We still end up paying $150. So there's more money that's going to come out of our pocket after this battle. So, you know, at what point does the balance swing to, you know, forget it, let's just let this thing go, or we just, you know, give up and let the ACC have what they want.
Right.
So it's really going to be an interesting battle moving forward. And I think what a lot of teams or a lot of schools within the ACC are doing is they're sitting back and they're watching this unfold and seeing which way the pendulum is going to swing. So if the ACC gains momentum in the upper hand, then they're going to stay put. They're not going to try and jump into the battle. But if they see Florida State and Clemson starting to get an edge and see the momentum swinging their way, then they could jump in there and possibly turn this into a class action suit and then move this from being in state court, which I think ideally all sides want, and move this to federal court so they can get one final ruling within that venue.
Well, there's a couple of sticky points that Baker brought up to me. Number one, I guess the Florida judge who's listening to FSU's case and sort of sympathetic to FSU doesn't think the ACC did everything it needed to sue Florida State in terms of taking a vote from the league. So that they kind of rushed through the process so they could file their lawsuit a day ahead of FSU. And then on FSU's side, the argument that's a sticky point is, well, you did sign those grant of rights. You, whether or not you like the marriage, you did sign up for it. So
yeah,
that's why this is probably going to end up getting settled out of court. Because really,
and the easier thing to fix is the ACC's problem.
Right.
That's just refiling the suit. Florida State has a signed contract. To be able to breach that contract and get out of it, they need to have the other side agree to that release in exchange for some monetary payment, or they go into breach ultimately to break the contract and they have to pay whatever fees are associated with it.
Well, here's sort of the important benchmarks? And again, you know, I had heard that the ACC TV deal has to be picked up by ESPN, you know, in 2027, right? Because it's signed through 2036, but they have ESPN has an option ultimately to say, well, in 2027, we want to let this deal die. We don't want to re-sign the ACC to this TV deal. So, Carlos, they have to decide that by February 2025. Okay, that's in FSU's suit. You can see there's a footnote sort of alluding that February 2025 is when the ACC, or actually ESPN, has to decide whether or not they want to keep this deal beyond 2027 with the ACC. And then the other date that is big is August 15th of this year, 2024. That's when Clemson and FSU have to tell the ACC they're going to be leaving and not a part of the conference for the 2025 season. So, those are the, you know, when in every legal battle, as you know, as a lawyer, there's sort of benchmark dates, right? When things can change, those are the big ones, I think, for fans to know. And as background on some of this here with the TV deal, ESPN obviously owns the rights for the SEC. And I think most people look at Florida State and Clemson and say, well, if they're going to leave anywhere, they're going to go to the SEC. That's where they fit better, right? I think from Florida State side, they think they have a seat at the table in the Big Ten. And if not, they think they can jump to the Big 12. Okay. So I think that's their sort of view, purview. And then with Clemson, I think Clemson wants to get back in the ACC. And the feeling is ESPN will pick them up in the SEC. So either way, if Clemson and Florida State leave, let's assume for a second that they are gone for 2025. And ESPN decides, well, after 2027, our deal with the ACC is over. We're not taking it to 2036. That's when Miami has a problem. That's when Miami has to find a place to go. And I think the feeling in Coral Gables, Carlos, is because they're AAU accredited now and they have the academic standing to sort of be another Big Ten team, and they're in the state of Florida, that the Big Ten would say, well, Miami, hey, you know what? Mario Cristobal's got this thing rocking again. You guys just made the playoff in 2024. Cam Ward was awesome. Your football program is heading back in the right direction. We want you to come join the Big Ten. So those are sort of just some of the preliminary dominoes out there, Carlos, when it comes to this subject. And it's a topic that I know Miami fans are interested in. I just wanted to talk about it today based on some of the conversations that I've had recently.
Yeah, get some of that legal insight from Stuart Mandel and Bruce Feldman for you. Huh? How about that?
That's why we have you on the show, brother. That's why we have you on the show. You are the resident legal expert.
Experts, very loosely. You know, but the other thing is, can Miami get to a point performance-wise where the Big Ten is going to take it? I mean, they did take on Rutgers. So for them, is there an appetite to take on Miami if they do take on Florida State as well to continue to expand into Florida? Or is it enough just to get Florida State? And now they said, we've got the foot into Florida. We don't need Miami as well. Yeah. You know, at what point does Notre Dame factor into this and throw a monkey wrench into everything? Because I'm sure the Big Ten would rather have Notre Dame than Miami. Right. So how does the ACC respond if Florida State and Clemson end up leaving? How could they pick up the pieces to keep this and cobble together a conference that's worth getting a deal done by maybe another network, whether it be Fox or even maybe looking at streaming services as a way of keeping the revenue coming in terms of TV deals. So there's options for the ACC. They're not as lucrative, obviously, as ESPN.
Right.
But you've got to put those contingency plans in place. And Miami either has to decide, we're jumping ship, or we're going to help the ACC build this thing out and maybe attract a Notre Dame, attract somewhere else, bring in some more teams to make this conference a little bit more attractive and take it to a different party other than ESPN.
Well, it's going to be interesting. I know the SEC and Big Ten deals are, I think, 20 through 2029 and 2032 or something like that. So they don't have any reason to rush into the process. But if Clemson or Florida State were to drop into their lap, I'm pretty sure they would take them. But what does that mean for Miami? What kind of TV deal would ESPN renegotiate, right?
Yeah, at that point, I think it's not going to be somebody ESPN. Else. Yeah, at that point, I think it's the ACC is going to have to move on and try and attract other teams mm-hmm. and try and get a sweetheart deal. Maybe, you know, work out a way for Notre Dame to be, again, part member of the conference, to work that out a little bit and maybe use NBC as part of the program and maybe leverage NBC's use of Peacock or they want to promote that and have more people tune into Peacock because they have that streaming service that they want to promote and grow and use the ACC as a way of growing viewership for Peacock.
Yeah, a lot of interesting possibilities down the road, Carlos. Let's get to the mailbag. It's 3:43 p.m. and I know you got people waiting on you.
They can wait, dude. They could wait. They waited until after April 15th. They didn't have a sense of urgency to get their damn taxes done. They can wait for me to finish a podcast.
All right. This first one is from Connor. Bunch of numbers afterward. Connor's been on the podcast before.
Oh, that's the jailhouse guy, right?
He shares his inmate number every time he messages us. Mario's tone has changed with the press this offseason. Previous offseasons, it was a lot of, we're making progress, but there's a long way to go. I haven't heard that much this go around. Do you think he believes he finally has a roster that can compete for conference championships? Carlos, has Mario sounded different to you?
I think there's an expression that Cubans use when someone gets very excited about something. You tell they're a little bit itchy and antsy about something, they're very excited. Uh-huh. It's called le pica culo. And I think a Mario le pica culo because he thinks he has a really good football team or the opportunity to have a very good football team heading into the season because of Cam Ward. And that's not an offensive term, by the way.
No, it's not, but it still makes me giggle.
The literal translation is your ass itches.
Yeah, I think Mario definitely feels better about this team. I think he definitely feels better about the quarterback position. And I think there's more confidence that this team is going to take a step forward in year three. A lot more confidence, to answer your question, Connor. This is from Andrew V. Did Jaden Wayne, Nigel E. Kelly, and Jared Harrison Hunt all leave because of NIL money? No. It wasn't because of NIL money. I think one thing you have to understand here, guys, is all of these NIL deals that these players sign are year-to-year basis, basically semester-to-semester basis, in the sense where they'll get paid, they'll collect their money for that semester. If they decide to leave or transfer, then the deal's done. But I think Nigel E. Kelly ended up, at UCF? I think Jared Harrison Hunt could be SMU. I think Jaden Wayne could probably be going back home to the Pacific Northwest. Miami has a really good NIL system. I think what happens is what I said earlier in the show, that Miami comes to you and says, hey, thanks for playing great. This is the scenario for next season. If you don't like it, you can hit the road. We've got other guys that we've recruited behind you that we think can do the job just as good, if not better. Thank you for your service. And I think that's the way business goes down now in college football.
Yeah, and I think it was clearly if they were the caliber of guys that they needed to keep onto the roster, they were concerned about losing, they would have tried to find a way to keep them here. Mm-hmm. Or they would have landed at places that were better opportunities in terms of high-profile programs than Miami. If they would have landed at a Georgia and Alabama, somewhere like that, then you'd be like, okay, then these guys obviously it was an opportunity for them to step up at a different level, compete for a national championship, and they're obviously highly talented guys. And if you got a guy going to UCF, you know, not to knock Nigel E. Kelly, he just didn't develop as quickly as maybe Mario wanted, and he probably wanted more snaps, so he decided to go somewhere that would offer that to him. Same thing with Jaden Wayne, and obviously Jared Harrison Hunt, being a guy that's been a starter for a long time down here, got a lot of snaps, didn't want to see his snaps get eaten into, and decided to make a move.
All right, this is from the Baba, or Shao_Dre. Okay. Weakest position on the team and the current plan to rectify the issue. Thoughts on the development versus portal debate. Let's start with weakest position on the team and the
defensive
current
back.
Plan. Defensive back. We can agree on that hands down. I mentioned Dyani Hill. I don't think there's a very good talent base for DBs right now in terms of guys that are out there. There could be more that enter by April 30, which is when the window closes. But I think right now there's just not a lot of inventory.
Yeah, and I think that the secondary plan is what you said last week, which is you help the secondary by having a really good pass rush, so they just continue to go after defensive linemen and continue to bulk that defensive line up so they can come at you in waves and have enough guys to put pressure on the quarterback to make it uncomfortable for them and really confuse that offensive line and put pressure on them and make them make mistakes. So at least the secondary isn't as glaringly bad as it seems or as they are, because mm-hmm. the quarterback's having to get rid of the football a lot. But from what I saw in that spring game, obviously it's a spring game, you know, that secondary is pretty bad.
And then the second part of your question, Baba, on development versus portal. I think you need a base. I think it needs to be 70-30 in terms of the split, right? 70% development, 30% portal. I think as long as your starting lineup, like what would be 70% of your starting lineup, 22 guys, what would that number be, Carlos? I'm not a mathematician. You are.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Well, 70% of 22. I'm going to use a calculator because I don't feel like doing math right now.
Look at that. I thought you would have known this off the top of your head. You're the smart guy here.
15 people.
15. So if 15 of your 22 starters are homegrown, that means I think you're doing a good job in recruiting. That means 15 of your 22. Then the other seven you fill in year to year to year because maybe a need arises. Maybe there's an injury. Maybe their guy leaves because he's not happy. He's getting enough playing time or he goes to the NFL. All of those type of factors. I think Mario, while he has certainly used the transfer portal maybe more than I thought he would when he first got here, I do think he's been very effective. If he gets Cam Ward, Damian Martinez, Marley Cook, CJ Clark, and I don't know, who else did they get in the portal this last window, Carlos? Michelle
the center,
Powell.
The center.
That's yeah. Six guys. That's six, right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
If six of like the 13, 14 guys come in here are starters for you, like that's a pretty good percentage. Like
that's a good hit rate.
It's
yeah.
a good hit rate. And if the other guys are all rotation guys, meaning they're backups or guys that play some because, you know, you need to bring guys off the bench, then I think you did a good job. And I think that's a good way to do it. And I think Mario's plan ultimately is not going to be Deion Sanders. Hey, we got to get everything out of the portal and maybe a couple of five-star freshmen. Like I it's the complete opposite of that. This is the way you build now, in my mind.
Yeah, and I think it's also dependent on the year, right? So mm-hmm. it's year by year, depending on how many guys you lose to the portal, depending on how many guys go early in the draft. It all depends upon what the structure of your roster is going into that season. And also, do you think you've got a shot to compete? Like, you know, we just talked about. If mm-hmm. they've got a guy like Cam Ward, they've got a couple special pieces, and they think that they're missing one or two guys in that starting lineup to be able to take them over the edge and right. make them a real player in the playoff race, then you stick to the portal and you add what you need.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is from Jay Miller. Will the secondary prevent this team from winning an ACC championship? Carlos?
Could be, depending on how well that defensive line plays and how much pressure they're able to put on quarterbacks this season. Yes, they could be a very, very glaring hole back there and one of the things that prevents them from winning the ACC championship. Or they could add a guy here or there and then be balanced enough to where it doesn't matter. Or they do enough to be successful. The other thing is, if you don't have enough talent, then maybe schematically, Lance Guidry does something on the back end to help these guys, you know, maybe play a little bit differently and play into their strengths as opposed to playing a certain system where he wants to play, but maybe plays to their strengths a little bit more and makes them look better based on how their schemes are.
I like three of the five they got right now. I like Damari Brown. I think Daryl Porter is a solid guy, and I think Michelle Powell. Those are three quality starters in my mind. Beyond that, I'm skeptical. I just am. So I think if they can get two guys somehow and stay injury free, then I don't think it becomes a concern. But I think if you lose two or three of those guys to injury, then yes, it could then absolutely prevent them.
Then that becomes a shit show.
Yeah. This is from Jake Campbell, the one coach soup on Twitter. Welcome back from tax hell, Carlos. Keep those IRS haters off of us normal people. He says, of the guys visiting this weekend, Martinez, Barron, Brown, Barrow, Harmon, and the corner out of Marshall, if Miami can only land three, which three are the most important? Which positions do you think are the most important, Carlos? I think Martinez certainly is number one.
Yep, he's the corner from Marshall.
The corner from Marshall is your second guy?
Uh-huh. Yeah, you need depth there, and I think maybe Barron.
I would say Barron or one of the D-tackles. I think either one of those guys, just another big-bodied lineman that you can throw in the mix. I honestly, the defensive line I'm not worried about, Carlos, because I've heard nothing but unbelievable things about the freshmen in this class. Like, they're just like, dude, these guys are legit. Like, Reuben Bain was awesome last year. He's going to continue to be awesome. But there's probably another couple Reuben Bains in that group.
Well, hey, if they're that good, then thank God. But yeah. I think you need at least one more edge guy. I think, obviously, a defensive tackle to me is always a concern coming off last season. So we'll see. But I think they definitely need the help at corner. They definitely need the help at running back. And then toss up to me between edge and tackle.
From Ralphie Rodriguez, RRod54 on Twitter. Who's on the roster right now who can be a first-round pick next year and the year after? Well, Reuben Bain and Francis Mauigoa are not draft eligible until 2026, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. 23, 24, 25. Yeah. 26 draft. I would say of the guys on this team for next year, well, Cam Ward, I think, obviously, is a guy that could has a high ceiling that could really blow up. I don't know that it, I mean, the question was draftable or first round. I forgot what
first,
it said.
Did it say first round?
First round pick next year. I think Cam Ward has that potential with a big year.
I think if Akeem Mezidor comes back healthy and has it plays to his potential, he might be able to be a first round pick, but unlikely.
Yeah.
I mean,
Jalen Rivers would have to be Outland Trophy winner, like, I think.
Yeah. If he plays well this year and he's all ACC first team, he's got a shot.
Inez Cooper, maybe. He's a big body dude.
I don't know. I think it's better, maybe a tackle. I think that's why. I don't know. I think Inez Cooper's okay.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, if he has another lights out year and shows that he's got the physical ability, maybe Francisco Mauanoa.
Yeah, I don't know that he's fast enough. I don't know if Kiko's fast enough. Linebackers are usually not first round picks. I don't know that he has that in him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Hey, I think those are the only guys right now that I would say. I like Xavier Shepard. He's just not a first round pick. I don't think Jacoby George is a first round pick. I don't think Isaiah Horton's a first round pick. And I don't think Elijah Royo or Cam McCormick or any of the tight ends that would be draft eligible after this year. Mm-hmm. I would just say Jalen Rivers, maybe with a great year.
Cam Ward and
I guess Mezidor. I don't know.
Mezidor, maybe. Yeah.
Mezidor's feet issues probably scare a lot of NFL teams off, in my opinion. But we'll see. That's that question. All right, let's move on to the next one. This is from Larry Schender from Miami Media Associates. Thanks for listening, Larry. Is the 2025 starting quarterback on the roster today? Will the portal become a bigger NIL value versus freshman acquisition in the future since young players can leave in 1 year, like Reggie Wayne? Is the 2025 starting quarterback on the roster today? I say no.
I say probably not.
Yeah, I think Emery Williams would have to do something special this year and be pretty unbelievable. And the coaches would have to sort of say, man, that guy, what a jump as we redshirted him this year. Like, I would need to hear that consistently for me to believe that. Will the portal become a bigger NIL value versus freshman acquisition in the future? No, I think if you can pay for talented freshmen, that is a better plan than having to just rely on the portal and older guys, because you don't know what you're getting. You have to trust a different sort of evaluation. At least with freshmen, you have a little bit of time, right? You probably have a year or two to figure it out.
I think it depends on the portal guy. I think it depends on the portal guy to me. To me, if it's, and also the makeup of your roster, right? Like, let's say, for instance, we'll take this current Miami roster, right? And let's say we had an opportunity to either take a freshman, a talented freshman defensive back, or to get a guy from the portal who's got tape already that started somewhere else at a Power 5 school.
Right.
I mean, in this instance, you would probably take the Power 5 guy. But now if you've got a deep DB room and you want to continue to develop that talent, even though you probably have a shot at making a playoff this year, you probably take the freshman. So it's all dependent upon your current, like we talked about, your current roster, your current situation, what your outlook is coming into the season. I think it's a balance between both. And depending on, to be an effective team, you got to be able to use both. Ultimately, the goal is to recruit enough guys to have enough balance throughout the roster and throughout the classes to be able to continuously feed in talent year after year with your own individual recruiting class and your own foundation, your homegrown guys. But you're going to have to pluck guys from the portal to fill in those gaps because you're going to lose guys. There's going to be attrition, and you're going to have to fill those gaps with portal guys.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be be interesting to see how teams adjust year to year to year with this stuff, with so many guys leaving. All right, Carlos, this is from Hurricane Andrew on Twitter. Question for the show. Will Carlos be more positive when talking about the Hurricanes this fall?
More positive than when?
I don't know.
Listen, guys, I am going to be as positive as the Hurricanes allow me to be. How's that? I am not the type of person that's going to blow smoke up your ass. And I'll be very honest, and Manny knows this, I've held my tongue for years as to how I've felt about the team, because I don't want to ruffle your feathers, you guys, and make you guys feel bad or depressed or pissed off at me because I'm being too real with it. But I'm going to be real. For the most part, I'm going to cut loose a little more this year, I think, than I have the last couple of years, just because I'm tired of holding back and I just want to see some results. But I'm not going to blow smoke up your ass. I'm not going to make you feel good. I'm not going to be one of these guys that hosts a podcast. Not that I host this podcast. I'm just here along for the ride. But that's on a podcast and constantly says great things about the Hurricanes and about their players and about guys they know because they have a relationship with them and they want to see them because they have favorite players on the team and shit. To make you feel good and make you feel like the outcome of this team, the sky's the limit and how great these players are. I'm not going to do that. That's not who I am. I'm not like that in my life. I'm not like that with myself. I'm very honest with myself. I'm very mediocre in a lot of areas of my life, but I'm an honest person. That's just who I am. And if you don't like it, sorry, you know, but I can guarantee you one thing. You're going to get shit from us, from me and Manny, that you're not going to get anywhere else. And one of those things is the reality of things, the way things really look, not the way things other people want to tell you they look.
Well, Carlos, I always appreciate your honest takes and smart takes, because you are a very smart guy. You've played the position before, quarterback, and coached and been involved in all kinds of stuff. So I hope people appreciate you. And I think, look, man, most fans just want positivity. You're right. They tune into a lot of other podcasts for that. You and I try to keep it as real as possible every show. And that's why I like doing the show with you.
Absolutely, man. If you guys want rainbows and flowers and nice shit to be said about the Hurricanes, we ain't for you. If you want the real deal, if you want us to tell you what's really going on and be informed and be a smarter fan moving forward, hey, that's what we're here for. And if you want hot dad bod, like mid-40s lusciousness, you got to tune into YouTube.
There you go. There you go. This question from 56 Blaxican, our buddy Steven Thunder. Did Lito do Nevin Shapiro's taxes and help him shoot his recent Instagram video? Also, can you long snap, Manny? Carlos, I can't long snap, Carlos. What about your Nevin Shapiro taxes and his Instagram video?
I cannot disclose my clients to the public, and I cannot discuss what services I perform for said clients, whether or not they are my clients.
Mm-hmm.
Or even meetings with people that I've had that have approached me about being, having them as my client.
Right, right. I gotcha. This is from Veconomics, one of our frequent commenters. He says, Manny, Barry Jackson from the Miami Herald quoted some staff members saying they were pushing out Mario recruits that weren't good enough. How many games before we hear about how bad it was when Mario got here? What's your take on that?
See, that's my concern. That's one of the last episode I did on my podcast, was that concern of what is the tipping point to where now Mario starts bleeding people from the program, bleeding players and losing top recruits because the production on the field isn't matching the hype. At some point, if he throws up another 8-4 this year with Cam Ward, you know, red flags are going to start going up. If they win less than 9 games this year, 8-7, red flags are going to go up. If they win nine, but the three losses, one of those is just another mind-boggling, head-scratching loss. I'm not going to, you know, allude to or say what I'm talking about because you've heard it enough. That's going to be another problem. But if they're 9-3 and then, hey, the three losses they had were reasonable, they fought their asses off, and they continue to show progression, then I think they'll be fine. If they're 10-2, same thing. They keep showing progression, then they'll keep elevating. If they make the playoff, then clearly things are trending in the right direction, and I think that'll lead to more guys jumping ship over to Miami.
Yeah. This one's from our buddy Kevin Harris. When I requested questions for the mailbag, he responded, when are you getting in the transfer portal? Butte, Montana's weekly paper has an opening. Kelvin, I love you, man. Hope you're doing well. I know your Lakers are down 2-0 going into tonight. And I hope if you're listening to the podcast today, just understand that the only way I would be moving to Montana is when I'm retired. And I'm 45 years old, and I still hopefully have another 10 years in this business at least before I ride off into the sunset.
But look at that. Looking to retire early at 55. Are you going to buy Phil Jackson's place in Montana? Is it Montana or Wyoming where he has that place?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm a big fan of horseback riding and living on a ranch. I think that's the way I'd want to retire, Carlos, kind of like Yellowstone-ish. But I don't know that I could afford it on this salary that I
Yeah, you look like a Cuban Kevin Costner. And yeah. you look like you'd like to ride a bareback.
Guys, thanks for sending in questions for this week's mailbag. I'm sorry I didn't get to all of them. I enjoyed doing the podcast once again with Carlos. It is 4:00.
Although I'm not Stuart Mandel or Bruce Feldman, but hey.
Yes, even though you don't have the pizzazz and the Twitter following of those guys, I wanted to thank you for doing the show with me once again, Carlos.
I think it helps because they're not antisocial like I am.
Correct. Right. You just don't like talking to people. That's the truth.
And ironically, that's basically my job.
Good luck to everybody who's doing their taxes with Carlos Ledo. Carlos, where can people buy your t-shirts?
Hit me up on Twitter. I've decided that the website we're developing for my wife's stuff is just going to be her stuff. I don't want to force the MIA all day stuff on her site because it really doesn't match the theme and it doesn't match what she's doing. And she's got enough great stuff that we're putting on there that I just wanted her to be the focus of it. Although she designs the shirts anyways. I mean, sorry, I have nothing to do with the shit. Like I said, I just call the play. She drafts it. She draws the shit up. She makes it happen. And I just stand back and look pretty for it. But yeah, hit me up on Twitter, man. So that's the best way to get a hold of it. And I'll let you know what I got. And well, the pictures are pinned on my Twitter profile if you want to see it as well.
All right. Now you know where to go, folks. Make sure you check out Carlos's Twitter page. Make sure you follow us and subscribe here with the Wide Right podcast to get any of our future recordings down. Carlos, had fun, man. Enjoy the draft. Are you doing anything this weekend with the draft? You going to sit there and watch it with a couple beers or just finishing these tax extensions?
Sure. Like, I don't need an excuse to sit down and watch sports with a beer, man. You know.
All right. I know. I just wanted you to say it. All right, brother.
Yeah, I wanted you to admit your problem. Thank you.
Thanks for doing the show. See you guys next week.
Peace.